Sorry for it took us a little bit more than 5 minutes to get back up here, and that's completely my fault. I was gabbing. So you may not know this about me, but I am a landlord currently. I have a piece of property in the city someplace, and so here's a little story for you. So one day, I am making my way to my mailbox, and I pull out the mail, and I still like to get the mail. It's a weird little thing. You know, when you're a kid, it's like, oh, it's fun to get the mail. Maybe there's something for me, even though there never is. And she pulls something out, and in the mail, I got a little flashback of my childhood. Oh, there's a hand-addressed letter for me, and it feels like it's got something in it. And you know when there's like a picture or money or something in it, you can tell. And so I pulled it out, and there was no return address on it. And I said, oh, goody, you know, I wonder what this could be, you know, just kind of a classic reaction. And so I opened it up, and I got in the kitchen, and I was pulling stuff out, and I could see there was a photograph in it. Now, you know full well that all of the best letters you've ever received in your life are signified by having a photo in it, because that's someone that loves you. You know, hey, I just thought I'd send you a copy of this photo that we, you know, shared together this time back in the Bahamas or whatever. And so I pull the envelope open, and the photo falls out, and the letter's in my hand. I look at the photo, and of course I look at the photo first, and it's weird. This must be some sort of a mistake. It's a photo of bags of trash on a curb. I was like, this must be a mistake. And so I set it down, like, I don't know, maybe it's somebody that's, you know, losing their vision or something, and they just put the wrong thing in the thing. And so I go to read the letter, and the letter does not start out the way that you would expect a nice letter to start out. It says, Mr. Smith, comma. Mr. Smith, comma. And it goes something like this. I thought that as a concerned member of the community, I should make you aware of the deplorable condition of the property which you own. You, sir, should be ashamed and are a disgrace. Oh, you've really hooked me at this point. You know, I'm going to finish it now. And it just kind of went on. These bags of trash have been sitting on the curb across from my house for days. And they stink terribly, and I was so ashamed of the sight across my house that when I had people over, I felt I had to go out. I could not take it any longer. I had to go and rebag some of them because a dog had gotten into one of them, and they stank terribly, and you know, it just kind of went on and on and on. And it was just kind of like, the point of this letter is to make sure that I thoroughly understand how bad a human being I am. And, you know, there are implications about, you know, the quality of my raising as a child, you know, those kinds of things, like, what kind of a human being are you? And, you know, in my mind, I'm reading this thing, and I'm thinking, like, they're new tenants, you know, they probably just didn't realize that they have to put it on the other side of the property, on the other street, or does it get picked up? You know, they just don't know the deal, okay? Just chill out, lady, just chill out. And of course, at the end of it, it was signed, you know, anonymous neighbor. You know, I don't get to know who it is. So this next message this morning comes to you courtesy of Angry Neighbors. This is our next installment of Good Neighbors, our series. Angry Neighbors have brought this to you and sponsored it. Listen, angry people, there are angry people in the world. Angry neighbors are the people in life who they know the way things should be. They know what they should be getting from you. They know the treatment that they should be receiving, the preference that they should be receiving. They know the money they should be paid. They know those things. And they have reached a point in life where they are willing to say pretty much anything, whether it be insult or threat or slander you or send you nasty letters. They're willing to do pretty much anything just to be sure they can get the reaction that they want. You don't know anybody like that, right? You don't know anybody who's just kind of demanding all the time, and they don't care how they project themselves. They don't really care whose feet they step on. They don't really care as long as they get the point across and they can intimidate a little bit or you know, twist your arm a little bit and make you feel emotionally manipulated into giving them what they want. You probably don't know anybody like that, right? Now, see, here's the truth. There's an angry person living on every street. There's probably one on your street. They might even be living in your house. You might be the angry person, You might be an angry person. I was talking to my friend this morning. He says, yeah, I think this is about me. I said, maybe. There's one in every workplace. There's one in every classroom. There's an angry person somewhere, pretty much everywhere. And here's the thing. If you know an angry person, they can make life miserable. They really can. It can be misery to have an angry person in your life, in your neighborhood, whatever your neighborhood looks like. And here's the thing about being an angry person. If you come at me angry, hostile, you know, you give me the impression you really don't much care about me, you're just here to get what you're supposed to get from me and go, I don't want to give you anything. I don't even care what I owe you. It's kind of like, you know what? I know I'm supposed to give you that, but how about I give you a little less, and we'll just call that jerk tax, okay? Why don't I just, when I'm reading this letter, you know, you'd think I'd be thinking, oh, this poor woman walked across the street and picked up the trash, and oh my gosh, I feel so bad, you know, and that shouldn't happen. She doesn't pay taxes for that, you know. But in my head, I'm kind of thinking, you know what? I hope you touched some poo when you did it. I hope you got your hands, you know. I shouldn't think that, but that's kind of how it is. When somebody angry comes at you, it doesn't matter their cause, it doesn't matter how just it is. Your first reaction is to go, you know what? Maybe I'll get a little dog poo and put it in a bag and put it on your front porch because, you know, it's just natural. It's a human reaction. But you probably realized, if you've been around a little while, that doesn't really help make anything better, does it? You know, when one person gets angry and then the other person gets equally or more angry and it starts, you know, that doesn't really diffuse anything. And it usually makes the quality of life poorer, not better. And some of you have even seen feuds in your little neighborhood, whether it be your classroom, workplace, even in your church at some point, I don't know, in your friendships and your families. But you've seen feuds that have begun and maybe never even ended to this day because an angry person came at somebody and their reaction was, okay, I'm going to give it right back to you. I'm going to balance the equation a little bit. You know, you come at me like this, you know what? I feel like I'm justified to withhold a little of the fair and honorable treatment that I might have given you. I'm going to give you a little of something like your own medicine instead. Doesn't fix it, does it? And the next step in our quest to make our neighborhood better, to see the transformation that Jesus had in mind when he came to the earth, is going to be tied up in a Bible verse or two I'm going to share with you. It's from Jesus himself. But I want to tell you beforehand, I just want to make it very clear. Jesus has a very different idea about how to make things better. Very different idea about how to make things better. And this is going to be very familiar to you, some of you. You'll have heard these verses. You go, oh yeah, I heard these verses. Some of them have even been tricky for you when you've read them. Like, does that really mean what it sounds like it means? We're going to get into that. But for now, just listen for a moment and consider this, what Jesus says about angry people. Matthew 5:38. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. You've heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. This is an old saying. It's all about balance, you know, fairness. If somebody take something from you, if somebody's kind of a jerk, you know what? Give it right back. But this is what Jesus says. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. Doesn't that sound like wrong? Like, do not resist an evil person. Does that mean we just like, you know, let Adolf Hitler just do whatever he wants, you know what, take over the continent, whatever, you know. Hey, you know, if you want to come bust in my house and set my house on fire, it's fine. Jesus said it's okay. Go for it. And what I want to make very clear is that is not what this is saying. That's not what this is saying. And I want you to look at two words in that. I want you to look at resist, and I want you to look at evil. Because when we think of resisting evil, we think of, you know, we sent the boys over to Europe in World War II and, you know, freed up the continent and we did all these good things and we resisted evil. That's not what he's talking about. When he talks about resisting, he's talking about withholding something from someone that has a claim to it. He's saying, if you have somebody that has kind of malicious intent, that someone that does not care about you, somebody that's kind of a jerk, somebody that's not looking out for your welfare, your well-being, he says, do not withhold from that person what they should reasonably expect, the thing that they have a claim to. In other words, somebody's treating you like a jerk. You don't get to not pay them for the thing that they sold you. If somebody's, here's a great example for you. My grandfather had a refrigerator in his house. It was like 40 years old on my dad's side. And this thing is ancient. It's like a relic, okay? It's got weird handles on it and stuff, like a medallion. Like, I've never seen anything like this in my life. And look, I said, where did you get that from? He said, oh, well, I used to be a landlord. And one day, I hadn't been paid rent in a few months, and one day I saw a truck going up and down the road a whole bunch of times. And I put two and two together. I said, they're moving out. And they're gonna ditch the rent. So what do you think he did? He waited to see him leave. He went to the house and he took out everything of value. He took it home. That's what he did. That's what he did. That's where the refrigerator came from. So his house for like 40 years. It's like, yeah, you know what? They're not gonna pay the rent. I'm gonna go balance the equation a little bit. Nice new fridge, nice new freezer. I'm gonna take it. It's owed. Jesus says, don't. No, that's not how we do it. That's not how we do it. When someone doesn't care about you, even though they're a jerk, they could be the jerkiest jerk in the whole world, it does not mean that you should attempt to balance the equation yourself and even things out. That's kind of tough to hear because I'm telling you what, that feels natural. You treat me like a jerk, you know what? I'm gonna give it back to you. If you turn your filter off, you know what? I feel kind of justified to turn off my filter. Say what I think, what I feel in the moment. Jesus says, no. I got a different plan. And he goes on to say this. He says, if someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. A strike on the right cheek in his day was about as offensive as a statement that you could make to another human being. A strike on the right cheek was given by the left hand, which is known to be the unclean hand. Okay, it still is to this day. The left hand's the unclean hand. You'd give that person, you'd slap him across the face, and for one man, one citizen, a Jewish citizen, to give another man a slap across the face was sort of the equivalent to saying, "You're not even worth being a slave to me. You're nothing. You're less than nothing. I consider you to be less than a human being." So one man, he says, in the case a man insults you and clearly believes you have little to no value, he says, you know what? Let him insult you. Do not retaliate. Do not try and balance the equation of his naughty behavior with your naughty behavior. I like the word naughty. He goes on. It's crazy. He says, and if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, he steps it up a notch. If someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let them have your cloak as well. Now, we get freaked out. We get downright freaked out when we hear that because we're like, this is the most sue-happy place in the world. Anybody would sue you for anything if they thought they could get something out of you. And this is, he's not saying, you know, anybody that wants to come along and say, you know what, I think you owe me $100,000. I think you should sell your house and give it to me. That's not what he's saying. He's saying anybody that actually has a right, anybody actually has a legitimate claim to something that you have because of an error that you have made, just pay it. Don't give him trouble about it. Don't give him trouble about it. He may be nasty. You're right. He may deserve less. You're right. He may hate you. But if he's got some kind of a real claim, if he could go to court and win, don't withhold from him what he's owed. If you owe it, pay it. But don't just pay it. This is where he gets crazy. He says, I want you to do one better. You get this angry person in front of you demanding from you what they should be able to expect from you, and they're hostile about it. They're not very nice. They're not very respectful. They're not looking out for you. He says, don't just give them what they should expect. Give them more. Give them better. You think, that's got to be a typo. It's not. He says this. He takes it up. It sounds like even another notch. He says this. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, okay, if back in the day, you may or may not know this, I don't know, but if you were an occupied nation under the Roman government, if a Roman soldier came along on the road, aside from you, or it doesn't matter which direction, they could be coming or going, didn't matter. They could come to you and they could say, I require you to carry my pack, okay, with all my bedding and my materials, whatever it is they had in packs back then, my bedroll, I don't know. I require you to carry my pack for me for 1 mile. And that was their legal right to do so. Now, did the Jews have a lot of say in it? No, they didn't. They didn't agree to that. But that was that soldier's claim. That was his reasonable claim under the authority of the Roman government, that I can require you to carry my pack for up to 1 mile. And I don't care how inconvenient it is for you. I don't care if you were going completely the opposite direction. Now you got to go this way 1 mile and then backtrack and then go the way that you're going. I don't care. That was my right. That was my claim as a Roman soldier. And he says this. He says, if someone forces you to do this, he says, you don't run. And maybe he didn't catch your face. You know what I mean? Maybe he didn't catch your ID. You don't just do that thing where you go, parents, you know what I'm talking about. You do that thing where you're like, hey, you. And you kind of your eyes move up. You know what I'm talking about? Your eyes move up, but you kind of keep doing what you're doing because there's this weird little hope that maybe either they didn't mean you or maybe they'll just give up because you didn't hear them. You know, like, you know, maybe they did that thing back then. I don't know. But he says, don't do that. He says, I want you to do what he should reasonably expect you to do under the law, but I want you to go one further. Don't just go 1 mile. Why don't you carry it 2? Why don't you carry it 2 miles? I'm just going to share this openly and honestly. That downright freaks me out. Why? Obvious reason. It's double. It's double. It's exactly twice. It's 200%. You get what? What? You know, maybe a little bit of extra wouldn't hurt just to make sure that you definitely did everything that he should be able to expect of you. You know, just to make sure and be sure that he can't complain. But 2, he says, go 2. Go 2. Why would he have us do that? Is he out of his mind? Like Jesus just having a bad day? Like what? Is he angry? Why would he say that? And what I want to tell you is that, first off, what Jesus does here is he says, this isn't about you. Not really. This isn't really for you, what I'm telling you. This is for them. And I want to make it very, very clear for you. Very, very clear for you. I want you to picture this for a moment. Picture this scenario, a Roman soldier. Grab somebody off the road, says, you look pretty tough. You got some endurance. Yeah, John Walecki right there. Come on, you know. No, you could sit down. But he's, yeah, you could carry my 100-pound pack for 1 mile. You can do it. And so you got this guy walking next to you, and everybody else that you ask to do this, everybody else, what do they do when you ask them to do that? You know, you get that sigh, you know, like when you're a kid and mom asks you to do something, and you know you're going to have to comply in the end, so why fight it? But you're going to give them the sigh punishment. You know, you know what I'm talking about. You throw the pack on, you know, and this guy doesn't do it. And so you're walking along, and you're like, well, maybe this guy's just got extra juice to burn, you know. So you're walking along, and you get closer to that mile marker. Get closer and closer to that mile marker. And you know that every step of this person's walk is out of obligation. Every step they take, it's because you're their obligation. Every step they take, it's because they're just trying to avoid trouble. They don't want any trouble. Every step they take toward that mile marker is just maintaining their reputation as a citizen. They're just getting you off your back, getting you off their back, just like anybody else would. But there's something that happens when you cross that mile marker. When you cross that mile marker, every step past that mile marker is something different. Every step past that mile marker, that Roman soldier is getting a little more and more confused. Every step past that mile marker, that Roman soldier, that hostile soldier, that person who thinks very little of your race, thinks this is a disgrace that he even has to be here with you and your people, he's starting to wonder, what in the world is this guy's problem? He can't count the mile markers? Is that the problem? Maybe he's just too stupid. He can't read, you know, can't read the markers. He can't count them. He's lost track or something. Well, good for me. But every step past is closer and closer to a very strange idea to a hostile person. And that's this. Does this guy want to do this? Does he want to do this? See, every step for that first mile is obligation. It's just you getting somebody off your back. But after the second mile is because they want to do it. The second mile is, I want to do you a favor. The second mile is, I want to help you. I want to be a blessing to you. I want to do something for you. See, what Jesus knows, and I want you to understand too, people aren't just born angry. People are not just born angry. They don't just wake up and hit everybody. You know? An angry person is a person whose spirit is frustrated with what the world has taught them over and over throughout the years of their life, that you have so little value that the only way that you can get what you need is if you get mean and nasty and demand it and take it. Because ain't nobody that considers you worth enough to just give you what you need like they should. You gotta go and take it. You gotta go get it for yourself. And it's every man for themselves. You know what? If you gotta get a little hard and you gotta get a little frothy and nasty, and then you know what? That's okay. You gotta get yours. You gotta get yours because ain't nobody think enough of you. Pardon my bad grammar, to give you what you need. But something happens to people when you send a clear message. I want to do something for you, not because I have to, because I want to. Sends a clear message to that person's soul. You know what, angry soul? You know what? You're actually a precious human being. You're actually a valued human being. And I'm going to do something for once in your life, maybe, maybe for once in your life, this might be the first time this has ever happened for this person. I'm going to do something for once that says and speaks to your soul, you have value, that somebody actually loves you, that there are people in the world that could care about you, that want to care about you, that you can actually receive things and not have to demand them. You can actually receive things, and it's God telling you through the actions of another person, I love you. I love you. I care about you. In spite of all of the things that have happened to you, all of the misdeeds, the abuse, the neglect, the insults, the offenses that have come your way, the bad happenings, whatever they might be, I love you, precious human being, signed God. And here's one of my representatives to turn the tide of your life and give you something nobody's ever given you, maybe. Just that little reminder. I had an angry person in my life. So angry. So angry. Oh, angriest person I ever knew. Every day. You think most people, angry people, don't just wake up angry, right? Some do. There was almost literally no way to be on this person's good side. Didn't matter what you did. The best you could hope for would be for them to leave you alone because you gave them what they wanted. You know, and every exchange with this person felt like an emotional manipulation game. Am I going to get what I want or not? Well, you know what? I'll just turn the heat up a little bit, little bit, little bit more, and I'll get what I want. I'll make it painful. I'll make them pay for it if they don't give me what I want. That's kind of what it was like every single day that you had an exchange with this person. It didn't matter what the thing was, if it was an important thing, a little thing, it didn't matter. Just angry, so angry. And I went away for a time in my life. I traveled out west, Midwest for a little while, and went to college, you know, different things in my life. And it was the strangest thing. I came home, and I hadn't been home in, I don't know, 2-3 months. This person came out, and I'd never seen him do anything like this before. They came out, and it was weird. It was angry. It was kind of like angry. And they said to me, "Didn't you miss me?" I was like, like, what? it was kind of like an angry person's version of, you know, the reunion. He's like, "Well, didn't you miss me?" I was, you know, what do you even say to that? You know what I mean? Like, you're angry at me. I don't. I wanted to, maybe. I don't know. And what are you gonna do? And it was so weird. I was close to the person. I was close to the person. And it was weird. It was like I went on autopilot. I'm like, my body did not know what to do. My body did not know what to do. So you know what I did? I put my arms out. I put them around the person because I could see they're having some sort of crazy tension I'd never seen before. And I hugged them. And I watched that person melt just like that. I watched them melt. I'd known that person my entire adult life. I had never hugged that person in my entire life, never been hugged by that person. I mean, this is not like a hugging family, okay? We're not huggers. This is not what we do. And I'm like, it was just like the human reaction. I don't know what to do. I think I'm going to hug you. I mean, it was kind of like that. And I did. And it was just like, and I could feel that person like emotionally just melt into a pile of rubble. Because they had no expectation. I'm ashamed to say, actually. They had no expectation whatsoever that somebody actually wanted them. A lot of frustration, but no expectation. They had every doubt, but no expectation. And that person melted into a pile of tears. And when that was over, they went back in the house, and I could hear them telling someone about how I had hugged them. He gave me a hug. I just couldn't even hardly hold it together. He gave me a hug. He said he missed me. Oh my God. You know, I'm like, wow. How long was that waiting to happen? How long was that waiting to happen? Maybe 30, 40 years that was waiting to happen. I'm telling you, there are people in your neighborhood, your circle, your sphere, whatever you want to call it, who would literally fall over and die if somebody did something for them beyond what was fair and beyond what was expected. If somebody actually went the second mile and said, you know what, you're right. You know what, I could see why you'd be angry. Let me take care of that. And you know what, while I'm at it, why don't I throw in this? Why don't I come over and why don't I help you out with that thing I saw you struggling with? You know what? I just want to tell you, I appreciate you. I appreciate you. It bothers me to know that this has happened for you. Let me do something beyond. It's one thing to be the Good Samaritan when somebody is kind of down and out for the count in the Samaritan story. It's one thing to do that. You know, they're down. They know it. You know, you remember the story from last week? If you don't, Google it. Parable of the Good Samaritan. Good Samaritan. You'll get it right up quick. It's in Luke, okay? It's easy to look at a person that's down for the count and say, you know what, this person is not normally my cup of tea, but they're really suffering, and I can't be indifferent. I'll help them out because they're not going to fight you. It's another thing to have somebody that's right up in your face all the time, and they're always complaining, and they're always trying to set some sort of a threat. If you don't come through and give me what I want, this is going to happen. That's different. But I'm telling you, Jesus is telling you, there's something powerful in there. There's something really powerful. And he's inviting you to latch on to it. Because something's going to happen. Now, let me say this. I'm going to give you this disclaimer. If you have an angry person in your life, maybe you are an angry person. We'll get to that in a minute. If you have an angry person in your life, chances are good that person has been so jaded by their experiences, has so much doubt built up in their heart, has so much negativity. You know what? That first time that you go the extra mile, you may still get slapped in the face for it. You may. The second or third step, you might still get slapped around a little bit. It's true. The fourth and the fifth step even, you know, because what's going to happen is you're going to get tested. They're going to ask themselves, is this real? I don't think it's real. You know what, if I just make it a little bit more difficult for them, they'll prove it out. They'll quit. They'll drop off the map. They'll quit. They don't really care. It's just, you know, maybe they're just trying to show off their friends what a good person they are. But as you keep going, as you keep taking the steps, there will come a moment when that breaks. There will come a moment when it's almost undeniable. Man, I think this guy really cares. That's weird. And their heart may leap. Something will happen. Something will happen. If it's authentic in you and you persist, something happens. So I just want to ask you, is it possible you've got somebody in your life right now? Just to be quite honest, if you were honest, okay, you kind of wish they'd just slip and fall in some poo. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like if something kind of bad and humorous happened, it's like you wouldn't admit that that's funny, but if it did happen, you wouldn't declare that it was not funny. You know what I mean? Because you're kind of like, this person is such a pain. They're such a pain to me. I can't stand. You know, it can get so serious. You know, that's kind of silly and funny. But sometimes there are people, if you were really honest with me right now, you'd say, you know what, it'd be a relief to me if that person just passed away in their sleep. Ain't that true? It can get bad, can't it? it can get bad. I'm not asking you to admit it. I'm just saying some people can make it so hard on others. It's almost impossible to think about it through Jesus' lens. But listen to what Jesus' lens is. Your pain in the butt, Jesus through his glasses says, this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity to exceed someone's expectations. This is an opportunity to exceed what people think they ought to have and deserve. This is an opportunity to exceed all of that. If you have someone that lives life as though they're in a deficit and they're entitled to something and they're trying to strangle it out of everybody around them, this is an opportunity for me to show them something different. And it's an opportunity that's not like quite like any of the other opportunities. Because an opportunity to exceed people's expectations is an opportunity for me to show that I love them. That's different from what everybody else does. That's different from our nature. We don't see it that way, but Jesus is inviting you as this next step in our series. Look at the hostile people just a little bit differently. There's a person in there. There's a person in there. Probably pretty hurt. And you are God's chosen instrument to make the difference. Now, there's a chance some of you, maybe even me, okay? You know, I'm not as holy as you think. There's a chance you're thinking not only about the people in your life, but you're thinking about yourself and your past mistakes. See, this is as human as it gets. We can all think of a time when somebody came at us and we didn't give Jesus back, we gave him something else. And chances are pretty good, off and on, you've been toying with this idea, I'm so guilty. I've done this a million times. While I'm talking, I could think of like five different times I failed this miserably. And I just want you to hear Jesus' heart for you. It's not about where we've been. It's about where we're going, you and me. This is a relationship between a father and a child. And it's not about where we've been. It's about where we're going together. It's always the first day of the rest of your life with me. So let's not dwell on the past. Let's dwell on the future and the impact that we can make together. There is no sin too great, no error, no mistake, no miscalculation so great that my forgiveness, I'm God after all, that my forgiveness doesn't cover it. Just like Brent said to us out of Romans 8 earlier today. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to pray before we end this, but I want you to think, as we pray, I want you to think of a person. I want you to think of a person that has been very hard for you to deal with. I want you to think of a human being that has been very hard for you in your life to deal with. They don't give you the benefit of the doubt, but they demand what they demand from you. They don't care that they're a little nasty, a little rough around the edges, but boy, if you did it, if you got that way, boy, they'd have something to complain about. I want you to think about that person. And as we pray, I want you to consider who they are and what God's future for them really is. Lord, I ask, Lord, that you would heal the heart of every person here today. Heal the heart deeply from the wounds that we wear from some of the people in our circles and our neighborhoods, Lord. I just ask, heal our hearts deeply. And I ask, Lord, that you would not just heal us from our wounds, but heal our minds and heal our eyes in such a way that when we look to people, we not only see someone like ourselves, a neighbor, but but someone who you have a destiny and a plan for, Lord, and someone who may have worn all kinds of abuse and neglect and mistreatment and bad things have come their way, Lord, and they are a precious child of yours, Lord, that we would see the way that you see with your eyes and with your mind for them, Lord, and that we would recognize that in that person there is a beautiful opportunity. There's a beautiful opportunity to turn the tide for that person's destiny, Lord. Lord, use us to cause someone else to believe in you. Use our lives to cause someone else to see how much you actually care. Use us, send us, put us in the place to make the difference for someone, Lord. God, they may have all kinds of people that avoid them, that keep them away with a 10-foot pole. Lord, no, not us. Give us a glimpse. Give us an idea. Give us something creative, Lord, that we wouldn't just fulfill our duty and obligation, Lord, but we would teach them the love of God through our sacrifice to them. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Listen, don't forget anything I just said, okay? I have just a couple of things before you rush out of here and run back there to eat all the delicious food and drink and all that stuff. Number one, if you are visiting us for the first time or second time or third time or whatever, please don't forget, join us for some food back there. We have food and drink, and it gives us a chance to just kind of mingle and get to know you a little bit and connect. We love that. Of course, if you are new, don't forget to download the app that we have and send in the little, fill out the little connect card that goes with that app. It gives us a way to connect with you. You might even hear from me. I might nudge you and bug you and find out how you're doing. See if you want to connect with anything that we do here, give you an earful. But also, we have a young man who is leaving our little church here in Watertown to go out into the big bad world. And so we want to pray for that young man. And the way that we're going to do that is, it's 11:21 right now. At 11:30, we're going to join him in the back room back there where the fifth and sixth graders meet. We're going to have a little prayer time back there and send him off with some meaningful in God for his future. So please join us for that if you're so moved. The young man's name is Victor Grady. And if you know Victor, you know he's heading off to college. So we're going to do that for him. Otherwise, I hope to see you next week for the next part of this little series. And you never know what you're going to get. So come back next week, and I'll see you then, and also at regroup if you're coming. Thanks.